a lot of people, especially in the tech world, but not just in the tech world, who go and they build this great thing. Here's the thing I'm trying to build without necessarily thinking about where does it fit in the market? What is the problem it's actually solving? Does it solve a problem, or is it just something cool you want to create? I like to fall back on basic business fundamentals that if you want to have a business model and not just a cool product that may or may not make money, you've got to think about what's the problem, because that's what people buy. They buy solutions to their problems.
I happen to know service businesses. That's kind of what works for me. But I think my biggest advice, or the thing, you know, having started a number of businesses, the most, kind of ongoing permutating point that I can give is that starting a business with low initial capital outlay is the absolute best piece of advice that I think I can give.
I think coaching is a huge market and it's only going to get bigger. Your biggest challenge is going to be, how do you make you stand out from everyone else who's out there? It's not to say that it's flooded. There's plenty of people in the marketplace. You just got to be able to position your niche. I really am going to implore you, please, if you're going to create a coaching program, be teaching on something that you're actually an authority in, you're an expert in, you've done this. I just really implore you to do that.
G'day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Entrepreneurs Rising, the show where we help businesses rise. And we are all about helping to empower small business owners. We believe that a rising tide will rise all boats, and that's what this show is all about. I'm joined by my amazing co-host, good friend of mine, Mr. Carl Taylor. How are you doing today, buddy?
Peter, I am feeling fantastic. I'm so excited to be here and to do this episode. This is going to be a really good one.
Sweet. This is going to be a good one. This episode is, what businesses should you be starting in 2021? And if you're listening to this at a time that we have started, at a time that is after the point when we have actually recorded this, these philosophies will still hold true, because these are Carl and my tips and ideas behind what kind of businesses you should be considering starting. And I think you get a bit of an idea and an insight into what kind of things we think about when we evaluate businesses, not just startups, but what is going to create value in an enduring way in a business. I know that when I think about business, Carl, my priority is always, 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 what is the long-term vision? And I think many people will jump into a business or jump into a business idea because they're excited with the creation phase of that, the creativity phase, and that's birthing something new. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. That excitement and that drive is required for you to build and launch a successful business. But you got to think about, what do you do with it once it's been created? And I always try and think about, okay, well, where is this going to be in 5 years? Where is this going to be in 10 years? What roadblocks might come up? But I think that's one of the key skills of a successful entrepreneur, or of a competent entrepreneur, is a long-term vision. What do you think? When you think about starting a business, I mean, it's probably been a while since you started a new business fresh, apart from maybe you count some of your side projects as a new business. What's your thinking when you're starting a business?
Yes, it's interesting. I definitely agree with the vision. Always got to have a strong vision of kind of what you believe it can be or will be. However, I come back more to, for me, I think more about, what is the job to be done? What is it actually trying to solve? Like, too many businesses get started, too many business owners get started looking for, they've got a solution and then they go looking for the problem that it solves, as opposed to going, what is the job to be done? What is the market? What is the problem? What is the need? And then what are all those jobs that need to be done by that market? And then coming up with the solution. And that's, understanding that solution can start to then shape what business model to go into, what you want to do. And I do always think about what the longer term vision. For me, it's about, when I'm thinking multiple companies, I'm thinking about how they all tie together. How much are they completely new markets, or is it using a same existing market that I already have access to? But if you're thinking about starting a business right now, like, really the thing to look at is, what's happening in the marketplace? What's going on around? Yeah, think about where it's going to be in 5 years, 10 years. I don't think about it that much. I just think about more the vision of where I think this can be, or what the finished product, as finished as it will ever be, could be. And then I'm looking at, well, what's the immediate? What can be delivered now? What's the job that needs to be done? Great book if you want to learn more about that. I think it's called The Jobs to be Done Theory. And it just really talks about how everything you buy or use, whether you're using Netflix, whether you're buying a milkshake, there is a job that it is doing, and you're hiring a product or a service to solve that. So when you think about that, That's what I really think about. Start thinking about what's the need, what's the problem, and then from there, I believe that's where the business will emerge. So I agree with you, but I don't go to the same approach, Pete, of going, okay, 5 years from now, what's going to be the obstacles? I'm not thinking about that stuff. I'm just looking at what's the immediate need and can I actually serve it?
What you shared reminded me of something that Cohen Ray has said a number of times in seminars and workshops that I've been in with him, is that value is only derived from the problems that you solve. So products don't solve problems. Products don't provide value. The value is created when a problem is actually solved. And that's in line with the jobs to be done theory, which if you, to the listener, have not heard of that, it's the study of and a body of work around, you know, why people actually consume and why people actually choose products and services. The book is definitely on the jobs to be done theory, but I've got a feeling it's got an obscure name. I think it's called Competing Against Luck. I think that's
That might be right. It's the author is Clayton Christensen, if that helps, if you're looking for it.
Clayton Christensen, and it will be linked in the show notes for you. But it's fantastic, and there's stuff on YouTube there as well. I really love that idea, Carl, of the different approach at first looking at, okay, well, what is like a burning house on fire problem that someone has, and how can a solution potentially actually help that?
And like, because you see this today, like, I even saw a video Gary Vee posted today as well. Like, it was some short form video social service that I'd never heard of apparently shut down recently. And he'd called it, he reckoned that they weren't adding value. That's what his post was about. But he was drawing attention to what's so true, is that there are a lot of people, especially in the tech world, but not just in the tech world, who go and they build this great thing. Here's the thing I'm trying to build, without necessarily thinking about where does it fit in the market? What is the problem it's actually solving? Does it solve a problem, or is it just something cool you want to create? Because Facebook was something that was just something cool to be created. So there's a lot of people who we admire what the creators did of the early internet years, but I like to fall back on basic business fundamentals, that if you want to have a business model and not just a cool product that may or may not make money, you've got to think about what's the problem, because that's what people buy. They buy solutions to their problems.
I think that's interesting. I'm inclined to argue with you with Facebook, because Mark Zuckerberg didn't sit down and think like, what problem am I looking to solve here? Like, I think he was just creating out of creation. And in that respect, was it just luck? You know, it's curious, at what point did the vision come in? And if you think about a business like Google, you could even argue that they started with a solution. They had, this technology that they were developing at, I think, Stanford Business School or computer science faculty. And they then, molded that to organizing information and crawling web pages. So, maybe they're a different category of businesses. Maybe the businesses that we're talking about are, more of a small or medium-sized business, and, people are not necessarily looking to change the world with their business. Maybe there is value in those businesses being categorized as moonshots or category breakers. Maybe they're just in a different league. I don't know if that brings up any thoughts for you.
Well, that's what I was actually kind of saying. Yeah, well, I mean, firstly, I actually agree with you. That's what I was saying, is that, something like Facebook, I don't believe they didn't have a business model in mind. They were just building something cool initially. That's what Facebook was. Google, I agree. Originally, the scientists, and they were working on algorithms and they were doing things, but they were actually seeking to solve a problem, not to build a business, but they were seeking to solve a problem. The early internet, if for those of us who can remember it, was just a mishmash of content. You had these horrible search engines like Yahoo, Metacrawler, AltaVista, Ask Jeeves, and AOL online portal. It was so hard to find information. So they set out to make something better, to find really good, solid, reliable content. So there was a problem, a job that needed to be done that they felt they could do better. So a job to be done is not about going, oh, there's already something that solves that, does that. It's about, can you do it better in a way that no one else is doing? And whereas Facebook, that was just Mark playing around in his dorm room, fiddling with a few ideas, and then eventually the idea kind of sparked. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's kind of more innovation, early R&D. I mean, Google, Facebook, those kind of companies are constantly investing in R&D, looking for what might be the next big thing. They don't have a business model yet. They're playing with VR. They're playing with augmented reality. They're playing with driverless cars, just hoping that they'll find something that will then turn into a business model. I think that's amazing. And if you can play at that level of the game, all power to you. I believe that probably the majority of our listeners are really in a point of like, I'm just looking to make some money, change from my career, or just move into something new. And that's why I think like going practical, just what's the problem that can be solved? What do you see out there? And here's a big tip for you. If you're thinking about what problem can I solve, look at problems you've solved for yourself or problems you've previously solved for others. Look to your own life. I don't know about you, Pete, but in my own experience, some of my biggest ideas and breakthroughs for businesses have come from me fully understanding the problem so well. And why did I understand the problem so well? I'd lived it.
Because you were the avatar.
I'd lived it.
You're the customer. Yeah.
So that's an early place to start looking at. What are the problems you're facing and could you solve it? Or what have you already solved in your own life that you could then solve on a bigger scale for other people?
That's interesting to me because I've sometimes struggled with the idea of not actually being my own customer and not being in the demographic of my own customer is probably the main thing. You know, my business is helping small, medium business owners with technology, getting it all in flow, getting it all in sync. But I'm the guy that tech comes really naturally to. And so not only have I had to, align the service to what our customers want, 3-4 years ago, I thought customers wanted live chat because I love using live chat because it's a more efficient way of getting support. But what I realized is no, my customers really just want to actually pick up the phone and talk to someone and get some help. And so it's not until the last 12 months really that messaging through Facebook chat has become really popular for my customers because the demographic tends to be more of like a Gen X or a baby boomer crowd that are my customers. And it's funny, like, you know, young people will ask me and they'll say, hey, what does your business do? And I say, oh, we help people with Gmail and Google Drive and getting their, you know, emails and their file storage set up correctly. And people go, oh, people need help with that. And it's like, yeah, like 80% of the business owners did not grow up with a Gmail account. You know, they've had servers and Outlook and, you know, BigPond Mail and things like that. This episode, Carl, is timely. You know, I want to get into what businesses we should be starting. A friend messaged me and they literally asked me this question. They said, hey, my partner and I would like to start a business. Do you have any suggestions? And what I immediately noticed was my bias come into play. And my bias is that I've always run service businesses. And so that's what I naturally gravitate towards. And I started thinking, huh, what kind of service business would I create? Well, it would probably be recurring revenue and it would probably have, you know, an element of offshore staffing to have some geo arbitrage in the labor costs. And then I kind of caught myself and went, wait, is that actually an answer to the question? Or is that just me kind of injecting my bias in there? And so I happen to know service businesses. That's kind of what works for me. But I think my biggest advice or the thing, you know, having started a number of businesses, the most, kind of ongoing permutating point that I can give is that starting a business with low initial capital outlay is the absolute best piece of advice that I think I can give. Right now, particularly in uncertain times, I'm not a fan of gambling. And there's a great concept in the book that I'm reading at the moment, Great by Choice by Jim Collins, about first firing bullets and then firing cannonballs. And the concept goes that if you want to try and sink a battleship, if you just start firing cannonballs at random spots, you're probably not going to sink the ship. But if you take a machine gun and you fire in rapid succession and you find where the weak points are, where the bullets will go through, then you can start firing cannonballs just at that one spot. And the idea of that concept is you first make small little tests before you go all in on something. And we were talking about our team today about a potential grant program for helping our team with microloans to start side hustles and side businesses. And I was walking this afternoon and I kind of thought to myself, you know, it's such a shame for businesses to think that they need a loan to start a business. I've never used a loan to start a business. I've certainly used capital to grow a business, but I've never used a loan to start a business. And you know, the whole idea of the lean concept, the book by Eric Ries, which talks more in the kind of like Silicon Valley perspective of starting and launching a, you know, high growth company. The idea is MVP, minimum viable product. And a lot of other launch artists in the, you know, kind of more internet marketing type space will talk about earning dollars before the product has sometimes even been created, you know, starting to get your first few customers and testing demand by running Facebook ads to a product that you don't yet have for sale, maybe sending people to a wait list to test and validate ideas. And so I would say, you know, if you're just starting out, try and do it for $0 because there's nothing worse than having a garage full of stock that you've bought before you've marketed something and then finding out that, you know, no one's going to buy this product, and you're effectively worse off than when you started before you started the business. And so Carl, I think you've got some particular industries that you're interested in. I'm curious to hear about those and, you know, what's meaningful to you there.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things I want to say to what you just said first too. Like, there are so many people that I see do that. They go away, they build this thing, they pour lots of money in it without proving. And even if they didn't pour lots of money in it, they might have put a lot of time in to build something, to build this amazing product.
Oh, building a course, yeah. Like spending months building and filming a course.
And no one buys it. I've done it. I'm guilty. I'm not saying I'm above it. No way. We've all done it. This is why we know, and we try to give the advice, please don't do it, because we've done it. You know, I created this great course a long, long time ago. Pete knows about it. It was called Inbox Domination. I spent, I don't know how long it was. It wasn't a huge amount of time, but it was still significant time. Created this great course. And then I went out there and did launches and tried to sell. It didn't sell super well. I ended up doing a partnership and kind of giving it away to a bunch of people. And then that got a lot of traction and it helped a lot of people. I know Pete went through it at one point. He's got a similar program that he teaches too. But like this course, like I didn't test that people wanted to buy it first. I was having this conversation with someone just the other day about, hey, like you want to build this course, go out and sell it and run the course live first to test the content, to see how it lands, record it even. And that becomes the product. You can do it discounted when you first launch. Like that's going to be better for you.
Well, make sure people show up for the bloody event when you present it live. That's a good metric.
Yeah. So, you know, are people prepared to actually give you a dollar for it is going to be a really big test. If someone's prepared to not just say, oh yeah, I'll buy it, but they actually give you money, that's a good test. Now, obviously there's some situations where that's not as possible, like software, for example. I've been building some software as a potential company. It's at the moment, it's still very much in R&D, but it's been 2 years of building this software. There's been team members being paid. Like it's cost a bit of money to get it and time to get this off the ground. And we're still only getting it the MVP status. And that's not something that I would recommend to most people unless you've got the money resources to do it, or you yourself are a coder. And if you are yourself a coder, you could probably build what's taken us 2 years to build. You'd probably get an MVP version of that up in probably a couple of months. You know, I used to be a coder. If I was good at what I was doing and that's all I did all day, I could have probably built what we've taken 2 years to build in a few months. But that the reality is I don't. I have other people working on it. There's lots of other pieces in the mix. So getting back to like more some specific industries and examples, I think there's a few we've already touched on. I think coaching is a huge market and it's only going to get bigger. The biggest challenge you've got if you go, hey, you know what? I want to be a coach or a course creator and sell courses online. Your biggest challenge is going to be how do you make you stand out from everyone else who's out there? It's not to say that it's flooded. There's plenty of people in the marketplace. You just got to be able to position your niche. And I really am going to implore you, please, if you're going to create a coaching program, be teaching on something that you're actually an authority in, you're an expert in, you've done this. I just really implore you to do that because that's going to be a challenge. If you go out there going like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to set up Facebook ads and you've never run Facebook ads, you're going to have people sure probably buy your course because they think that's an amazing idea, but you're going to struggle to get results for people. And then therefore it's going to end up hurting the business in the long term. Whereas if you go in, maybe you decide to spend a few months learning Facebook ads, running a few, taking on a few one-on-one clients for low price to learn it, practice it, come up with your own system and then launch a course about it. That's a different approach where you've done consulting initially, learned the process, learned some great keys and strategies from doing the work. And from there, you are able to create something that might be teach your course from that point of view. So consulting is always a winner. Just find something that you actually have some skills in, can help someone in, is a great business model that's easy to start. Coaching and the course creation model. Coaching is similar to consulting, except it's a bit more, you're working with people. You're not necessarily giving them the advice or doing it for them. You're actually kind of teaching them a bit. You're a true coach is more asking questions rather than telling. So that's kind of, they're the super simple. You can start that with zero money. You don't need money to do anything. You just need some connections, like go out and network. When I say connections, you don't need to already know people. Just be prepared to put yourself out there. Money can help put yourself out there, but you don't need money to do it. Some of the other models, I've already mentioned software. If you can code, I recommend it. If you don't code, I would stay away from that for now, unless you think you've got a huge, incredible idea that no one else has, then and you've got some money behind you or you can raise the money. The other business models that I think are huge in this period of time, e-commerce. We've seen with the COVID shutdowns that so much people who would have taken probably another 5 years before they were prepared to start buying things online are buying things online. And it's only going to keep growing. Retail is struggling. Retail is going to continue to struggle. Where I read an article even today about shopping malls in the US shutting down because they're just going to be shutting down these malls. And if you're from America listening or you've been to America, you know how big the mall culture is in America. So that's a pretty big deal. So e-commerce, you take Shopify as your shopping cart platform, super easy to get started. You connect that to Instagram and you do Instagram and the people who shop, mostly women, but not all, just women, shop on Instagram. I've been blown away at what I've been able to witness with my partner. I've never once bought something off Instagram. And my partner pretty well uses Instagram as her search engine. She's searching everything. She looks for a product. She finds companies. She finds things. She buys things all from Instagram. I knew people did it. I just never seen it done until recently. And it's really shown that if you can, you don't even need a following on Instagram. You can just be running ads on Instagram. You can get in front of the right people, get them to back to your Shopify site. People will buy all sorts of great products and things from an e-commerce store. So that's definitely an area to look at too. And then the final thing I would say is getting into industry similar to, I guess, an industry that's similar to me. It's known as productized services. A service, like find a really specific service that you can deliver. And you can deliver it in a way that someone can buy it like they're buying a product. You know, there's the really like try to be all everything agencies. And that's something I used to be. Or you can kind of really put yourself down and go, you know what? We just do video editing. Or we just do podcast guest reach outs. Or we just do this. And you build a business all around delivering this very specific service. That's the idea of a productized service. And that's another type of business that I think is, it's already getting big. It wasn't that big, as big as it is now, like 6 years ago when I started my company, but it's just growing and growing and growing. And there's always going to be these little micro niche services that you could potentially build a great little business and a team that could deliver that service for you in the productized service space as well. So there's some of my ideas. Pete, what about you? What's some of your thoughts?
I think if I can just share on that, you know, productized services being a service that's repeatable and scalable to deliver and easy for a customer to purchase and is, you know, not really bespoke. It's more along the lines of something that can be delivered in a fashion where, yes, it may have an element of customization or uniqueness for the customer, but it's something that you can grow a team and a repeatable process around. If you can find a recurring subscription productized service, to me, that's the holy grail. Now, that's the holy grail of a service business. Obviously, we're in the service world and not so much in the product world. But, you know, Carl and I, we're both fans of service businesses. We both happen to run recurring subscription productized service businesses. There are a lot of, you know, very, very unique advantages. Now, they take a while to build. That's the challenge. A lot of effort to build, you know, and time to scale up because you effectively need to build subscriptions and you need to chase the churn, which is the customers that are canceling the subscriptions and be, you know, bringing the new customers in and provide value over time and all those kind of things. But it is, you know, can be a very profitable business, you know, entity and setup. But I want to kind of like open up, you know, more broadly the scope around, you know, right now, what options do we have? And I want to share a couple of strategic thoughts that I've had around what kind of businesses you might potentially be interested in starting. Now, Tim Ferriss wrote an amazing book, The 4-Hour Workweek, which sold the dream of building a dropship e-commerce style business and retiring to Thailand once it was making $1,000 a month in passive income. And that's, you know, certainly, you know, one way of doing things. I like to live in a more developed nation, so I need a little bit more than $1,000 a month to live on. But the idea of creating a business which can run and only require your input in the business when you choose to is a very, very compelling concept. Now, I think that's great for solopreneurs who are just kind of like getting started out. The reality is that for your business to get out of the launch stage or the startup stage, you have to build a team around you. And building a team becomes a skill that you need to actually then develop. And we've got plenty of other podcast episodes on that. But I would say that the moment that you start building a team, you really have a level of responsibility that doesn't allow you to completely switch off and disappear from the business until you have scale and you have probably in excess of 20 employees. And so there's this big journey of, you know, building a team and going along that whole road and we could probably fill a whole episode with different stages of business, which I'm sure we will do in the future. But the reason I mentioned Tim Ferriss is I wanted to talk about one important factor or a number of important factors that the 4-hour work week really brought to us, to Carl and I, and influenced our businesses as we were growing and building them. Number one is employing a global team. We've all, through the corona pandemic, been forced to experience working remotely across all kinds of different industries. And for us, this has been the normal for many, many years. We've run our businesses completely remotely. Our team have worked at home. We don't have fixed offices. We do have some co-working spaces and whatnot and shared offices that we work from. But for the most part, our teams are completely remote. Now, remote is the new normal. We've been saying this and educating businesses on this for years, but now everyone's actually finally got a taste of it. Remote is the new normal. Does that mean that businesses will forever have staff working at home? No, not necessarily. But it does mean that flexible work will forever be a permanent part of our reality. Now, another factor to that is the ability to work with international team members from other labor markets, not only giving you financial arbitrage advantage, but also, of course, being able to bring in global talent and opening up your talent pool to people outside of just the city that you're in, which cannot be understated. It cannot be overstated. It's just an amazing, amazing advantage. And this is something that Carl said to me when we were sitting down for a dinner a number of years ago, when I was considering opening an office in one city in the Philippines. He said, well, Pete, if that city has 1 million people in it and the whole of the Philippines has over 100 million people, well, then you're restricting yourself to 1% of the talent pool of that country. And, you know, that was extremely, extremely meaningful to me. And it was really like a kick in the nuts at, you know, how small I was thinking with how important a more distributed and open team is. So I think considering that remote is the new normal, have a think about, well, you know, what might your competitors be doing or what might other businesses be doing right now in working remotely? And if you're entering a market where perhaps the incumbent businesses are still wishing that things will go back to the old way, well, maybe you can start a completely virtual team business that runs in a new way. Many businesses, and because we've been in the fortuitous opportunity to be acquiring businesses in this market, many businesses have office leases and they have vehicles and they have outdated ways of doing things which come with capital expenditure and capital responsibilities linked to those expenditures as well. And so I'd be curious if, you know, in the industry that you're interested in investigating, if there are opportunities to build a remote first company. Now, we're in the IT industry and our business many years ago was literally going to people's offices and helping them out with computers and servers and all those kind of things, right? And we made the choice about 3 or 4 years ago to become a virtual IT business. And some of our customers were not quite happy about it at the time. But when we said to them that we could deliver at 70% less than what we were charging them previously, every single one of our customers stayed with us. And some of those customers most of those customers are still now with us today because we were able to deliver in a much more cost-efficient way to them. And, you know, they just really didn't miss things. And that allowed us to grow. That allowed us to dominate our market. We're now the number one Google partner in Australia, in part because we were able to take advantage of working remotely where our competitors were held back by all the extra costs there. And, Carl, I'm sure you've been a witness to our business growth and, you know, I'm sure you've got experiences yourself of running a remote team and the advantages that brings as well.
Oh, 100%. Everything you say. I remember that conversation we had that dinner time a long time ago about, you know, I was just explaining why I had chose not to set up an office because I just saw the limitation. And as you're talking, you know what comes to mind of what business I would not be starting in 2020, 2021?
What's that?
A cafe or a pub or, you know, like, just, you know, anything that requires people to get really close together in and could be locked down at any time in all sorts of countries that you're in and requires leases and lots of equipment. Like, we're talking about what we would start. Let's talk about some of the things we wouldn't start.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be starting a commercial office space. I probably wouldn't be starting a co-working space either, personally. You know, like anything that you require a huge capital outlay to get started, I would be seriously questioning.
I think that's just how we roll. And I think some other ones that people might naturally want to gravitate towards, like a hand sanitizer business or a mask business, like all the obvious COVID ones. I just think that that's ridiculous because they're so obvious that so many people have basically like, you know, jumped into those businesses now. I think where the opportunity is not in those primary pandemic businesses, but in the secondary pandemic businesses. Maybe it's cleaning. Maybe it's supplying the hand sanitizer business. Maybe it's supplying the mask business. Maybe it's something that's going to change in the next 2 or 3 years, or, you know, continue to remain changed. Like, have a think about all of the elevator buttons that are going to be manufactured for the next 5 or 10 years are probably going to be plastic rather than metal. Are you a manufacturing business that may choose to invest in manufacturing in plastic components and switches rather than metal components? Random idea there. But you know, they're the kind of things that I think about, is like to try and stay away from the obvious ones and go for the second tier and the third tiers where there may be opportunity that others have not yet thought about.
I think it's worth also mentioning to stay away from a product. I remember watching this on Shark Tank years ago when that used to, I don't know if it's still on TV, but when that used to be on TV, you know, and you would see people come up with, here's my business. And it was like, no, you don't actually have a business. You've invented a product. That's what you've got. You've got a product. A business is you've got a product line. They buy this product, then they buy another product, or it's a consumable product at least. So they buy it and they buy it again and again and again. So that's another thing to really think about. If you are getting into the product business, like hand sanitizer, you mentioned hands. Well, that's all well and good if you manufacture hand sanitizer and you can white label that to a lot of people. That's different. But if you're selling hand sanitizer, you're not actually really in the business. You're just selling a product. That's all you are. You're a salesperson selling a single product. So you think about a whole line.
And that's not to diss anyone with like a side hustle Shopify store and you know, Instagram ads selling something that a million other people are selling. Like, if you can make money on it, great. But you know, I'm assuming that your bias is as mine is in creating long-standing value in a business and creating a business that is an asset. And the definition of a business is something that can eventually run without you. It's something you can eventually, you know, sell to someone else potentially. You know, that has to be an asset. And you know, one Instagram account or Shopify store in a busy marketplace, unless you have some kind of magic competitive edge, is not an asset. It's just a gig.
It's sell a product, which is great. I mean, even just the other day, I bought this really cool product. It's like this lens thing that was found on Instagram as an ad. That's how it came through. And it's just a product. It's a cool little business, if you want to call it. Like, I personally don't fully see it as that. It's more like they've sold this great product. What they now need to have is a whole line of great, like, you've bought this thing. Here's all these other camera gear. Here's all this other stuff that relates to the audience. You now know you've got an audience relating to camera gear because this is what the lens is for. Now, what else are you going to sell, market, whatever, as an ongoing? They had so much opportunity, which maybe it'll still come, but they haven't done it. They've just been focused on, I sold a product. So that's the other thing, is that you're starting a business, think about, okay, even if you start with the product, you going back to your earlier comment about vision, you want to have a vision of going, cool, once I've got this, here's what will happen next with I've got that market.
I'm going to throw in a little bonus and just peel back the matrix a little bit. If you ever find anything cool on a Instagram ad, if you go into AliExpress and search for it, you can probably buy it for $10 rather than the marked up price of $30, including shipping, that the that the Instagram ads will sell it for. But I have also been a victim of the Instagram rush and purchased a Starry Night LED light for the bedroom, among other things. Something that we haven't mentioned yet, Carl, and this is something that I've really been getting into. You know, obviously I've bought a number of businesses, and you know, acquisitions are something that's a key part of our growth strategy. You know, many businesses right now are struggling, are going through tough financial times, and would be helped by an injection of capital or even just an injection of fresh strategy into their business. And what I'm specifically talking about here is approaching competitors, approaching others in your industry, and having conversations around whether or not it might be an opportunity to partner up and trade out of the pandemic to greener grass together, or it may be an opportunity for you to acquire competitors and take them over completely. And you know, we've already closed a number of acquisitions in the past 6 months. We have another quite significant one, which is in final stages of due diligence, which is really exciting, hoping to announce that soon. And these have been with businesses that have been in our industry and have decided for them it's time for change. And so for some businesses, it may be taking over the business completely. For others, it may be, you know, like a merger or a partnership of some sort. But I think there's always opportunities, particularly when there's choppy waters, to look differently at what opportunities might be available to you. There are also businesses that are in the unfortunate situation of facing insolvency, and those businesses potentially have assets that may be able to be recovered and had value found out of those. Particularly at the point in time of recording this episode, the second layer of JobKeeper is coming into effect and the first one is actually exiting. There's a whole wave of businesses that are potentially facing liquidation. And the little secret with liquidation is that the liquidator must dispose of the assets and get as much value for them as possible. And so if you call up a liquidator of a business that you know in your industry that has fallen into liquidation, you can actually make an offer for things like the customer list, equipment, you know, technology tools, maybe the brand assets, domain names, phone numbers. You know, these are all things where if no one else has made an offer for them, you may be able to make a very small offer and actually, you know, be able to take on that business or salvage some of that. And you may think, well, you know, what's the use in a customer list of a gym, you know, when no one has, you know, everyone's kind of canceled their memberships and they're no longer customers. Well, if you want to start a new gym in the same suburb, then it would help to have a list of 1,000 or a couple of thousand people who are all in that suburb who are all interested in having a gym membership. That's your prospect list. And, you know, these may be extremely affordable for you to pick up some of these assets. I mean, there was a business that I talked about in an earlier episode where I'd offered six figures for the business. And then after the business was in liquidation, I ended up buying it for $15,000. And that was, you know, it was $600,000 in revenue in yearly sales. And look, there were some problems in that business, some debt and some other bits and pieces, but there are certainly opportunities there. And for anyone who's, you know, thinking that to themselves, you know, to you, the listener, if you're thinking, well, how would I even go about that, starting that? Well, you just start with a conversation. You know, worry about the legals and the negotiation and all those kind of things with your lawyers and that, you know, later on down the line, if you've got a potential deal going, but just start with a conversation. And, you know, particularly with businesses that you may perceive that are very successful, or you may look up to in the industry, or you may think that they've got everything sorted out and everything, you know, going right for them. There are always opportunities to have a conversation, because you never know what someone's personal situation is. And so I'm a big fan of looking at opportunities for mergers, acquisitions, partnerships, and you know, different ways of looking at doing business and walking into a business. There's a million benefits of buying a business. Check out our earlier episodes. There's so much there.
Check out our earlier episodes. I can't remember what numbers they were, but we've got two earlier episodes all about buying businesses. Pete even takes you through some of the deals he's done, including the one that he referred to. So if you haven't heard them yet, be sure to go back and check out. Pete, I also wanted to add in there what you were talking about. Well, what if you want to open a gym in the same suburb? Would 1,000 customers be useful, or at least customer audience of people? You've also, if you didn't want to start a gym and go to that capital expense, if you just wanted to become a personal trainer in the area, maybe a virtual personal trainer who does it, you've got a whole bunch of people who are, their gym is now shut down. They haven't been to the gym, but they'd like to get back to working out. Maybe there's so much value in that list. Or even maybe you're not doing that. You just want to sell some home workout gear that they haven't already bought. Like, there's just so much value in something like a customer list if you know it's a target audience. So really wanted to hammer that home.
Upload it to Facebook and, you know, make a lookalike audience. Just, there's so many options. I mean, it's funny, like when a liquidation happens and, you know, a lot of the assets and responsibilities can actually be, well, the assets hopefully are disposed of to you, but the responsibilities can be disposed of, things like office leases and whatnot. You can sometimes kickstart a business with the same customer base without any of the debts. The old owner is not allowed to, and there's things like phoenixing laws that you need to be careful of. But if the old owner is out of there, then there's a lot of opportunity to actually reboot a business. But we will save more of those strategies for another episode.
All right. Well, I think we've really gone to a lot of different angles when it's come to what kind of business can you start in 2021. We've covered starting, we've covered buying businesses, we've talked about specific industries, we've talked high level strategy around it. So if you are sitting on the fence, you weren't already a business owner and you were going, hey, what am I going to start? Or you are a business owner and you were thinking about starting something new, or you got friends around you, send them to this episode. Make sure that they're checking this out. We love you to just send, if there's a specific episode that's really stood out, share it on your socials, share it to a specific friend. We would love more people to get exposed to this information. Also, we would love your reviews on your favorite podcasting platform. We would love you to check out the show notes. You can find all the show notes for this episode and other episodes on rising.show. That's rising.show. So not .com, but .show. And yeah, look, I think we can call it a wrap. Pete, any final words?
No, that's the final words. Thanks so much for joining. I'll let you do the outro, Mr. Carl. Let people know where they can find our stuff.
Well, I've already kind of said, check us out, rising.show. Also, as I said, leave a comment on your favorite podcasting platform, Apple, Spotify,
send us
all
a
of
message.
The ones, Google.
Just hit us up on the socials. Slide into our DMs if you've got a business idea or you've got something that you want to know if we think it's good or if it's shit. Just drop it into us and we might even feature on an upcoming episode.
Totally. And that's a good point. Like, we'd love questions. If you've been listening along and you're going, you know what, I'd love to ask these guys a specific question. It might be about our businesses or it might be about business in general. We would love to hear them because that could help potentially be a future episode. Like, today's was inspired from a question that Pete answered recently. We would love your question. So contact us. You can find all the details on how to contact us at rising.show. Also, you can hit us up on Instagram and Facebook. We've got various pages for Entrepreneurs Rising. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
This episode was brought to you by Automation Agency. If you're sick of Fiverr and Upwork and want a reliable team of experts who can turn your marketing ideas into marketing duns, then head over to automationagency.com and check out what they can do. Whether it's graphic design tasks for social media, your presentations, or tech tasks like building funnels and email automations, or content creation tasks like copywriting and video editing, Automation Agency is the one team you need to help you market your business and free up your time to focus on more important things. So go and check out automationagency.com.